The Education Gadfly Show starts now. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who thought Polonium 210 was one of Jupiter's moons, Rick Hess. Welcome, Rick.
Hey, Mike. I just learned some disturbing news.
What is that?
That you are not really familiar with Pearls Before Swine.
I'm not. I remember Pearl Jam for the early 90s. Is that connected in any way?
No, not really. And in fact, when shown one of the better strips, one featuring the Crocs, which then Jill Escher laughed at because she got it, you looked more befuddled than anything else.
Said Jen Leisher.
Leisher? It's a softy.
But what I want to know, Rick, is are you ever going to go to New York City again now that they've banned trans fats?
So what's the deal? Does this mean when they like cook Krispy Kremes, they've got to cook them in different stuff?
I guess so. What do you think about that?
I think that's – well, I mean, Americans are fat.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I'm not really crazy about having – a state or local or municipal authority tell me how my food can be prepared.
This is paternalism. Paternalism is back in, especially in education.
Well, you've certainly been leading the charge.
Well, hey, you know, Paul Tuff's article in the New York Times, we talked about this, was all about these schools that are more paternalistic and trying to teach their students middle-class skills.
And the push for national standards and national tests.
You know, I was going to try to get through a whole podcast without not talking about national tests, so I'm not even going to touch that.
I'm digging it.
So, listeners, let us know what you think about trans fats. You can send us a note at letters@edexcellence.net. We'd love to hear from you. You know, we don't get as much mail as we'd like.
It's true.
We would like to get more mail.
Actually, what I'd like some mail on is Mike's got this whole thing about ogling women that he goes off on.
Oh, my God.
And if somebody would write in and let us know what they think of Mike and his whole philosophy on ogling, it would be much obliged.
Psychiatrists call that projecting.
Well, no, your philosophy on ogling, this whole deep antipathy you have issues.
Right. All right. Well, let's get going. We're going to start with Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have a special interview with a no-nonsense operator. Finally, in-house weirdo Liam will puncture our boredom with a shot of education news of the weird. So here we go. Pardon the Gadfly. Three topics, 90 seconds each. Jen, take it away.
All right. Topic one. No Child Left Behind's mandate that repeatedly failing schools restructure is a joke, filled with loopholes that allow districts to make superfluous changes while ignoring the real problems. Mike, who's to blame for the wimpy implementation of NCLB's public school choice and restructuring provisions?
Well, I'm glad you would ask, Jen. Rick had an excellent conference on this last week, American Enterprise Institute.
Up top, dog.
That's right. Front page Ed Week this week. Very nicely done.
Featuring a number of Petrilli quotes.
Well, there might have been a few.
Stud.
Thank you very much. But I presented a paper where I argue that, you know, basically implementation was not the problem. I mean, implementation of public
school. So you're saying implementation was handled effectively by the
Republic? No, not at all. Okay. I mean, there have been mistakes. There have been problems, right? Especially around public school choice, around restructuring. There's a lot more the department could have done and still should do. But I don't think it would change the storyline at the margins, that basically nobody is taking advantage of public school choice, or almost nobody, and that very few schools are actually being restructured in a meaningful way. Because the problem is, Rick, you cannot use the federal government to force recalcitrant districts to do things they don't want to do, at least to make them do things well.
So are you saying we just got to throw up our hands at low-performing schools?
No, I think that we have to fight this battle at the state and local level. I mean, I think we have to be a little more humble about what the federal government can and cannot do.
Are there things that the feds could do to support those kinds of state and local efforts you're talking about?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think if districts want to do things like offer more public school choice or restructure their schools, I could imagine federal money being made available for that. They could apply for, you know, competitive grants, and we could help support that. But it should not, you know, the idea that every child in a failing school should get choice, you know, it's great rhetoric and it's powerful, but we just can't make it happen.
And I got to say, that piece you wrote on this is really stellar. And folks can find that and the other papers available online at the AEI website. It's definitely worth checking out.
Shameless plugs all over the place. Okay,
absolutely,
Jen.
Absolutely, baby.
All right. Topic two, Rick. A recent article in the Wall Street Journal related to the current Supreme Court case about racial preferences in public school assignments says that regardless how the Supremes rule, white middle-class parents in Seattle will probably still get what they want. The author cites several instances where parents have threatened to leave the district entirely if their kids aren't placed in good schools. More often than not, the district caved. Rick, should urban districts care about losing their few white middle-class families, or does it not matter? Why do they kowtow to them?
Wow, this is a funny argument, though, isn't it, just on its face?
It was a very long description.
It's, I mean, just the right for the journal to argue this, because part of the argument for choice has always been, well, the choice levels a playing field, which is not an unreasonable argument. And
I mean, because like poor kids get to choose schools in affluent neighborhoods.
Right.
Okay.
So, but anyway, sure. I mean, districts have a lot of reasons to care about the middle class. It's the middle class who actually own property and provide the bulk of the tax base. It's middle class kids who provide beneficial peer effects for other kids. It's middle class kids who other people want to be in school around and whose parents organize and form PTAs and attend teacher night. So yeah, districts have a lot of perfectly good reasons to care about holding on to their middle class kids.
All right, but let me play devil's advocate. Think here in Washington, D.C., in Anacostia, where the schools are all high poverty, high minority. Is it going to matter to them if parents in Chevy Chase, a wealthy part of D.C., suddenly take their kids out of public schools or move to Maryland? I mean, how's that going to impact those schools that don't have any diversity anyways? I mean, are somehow those parents in the other across town advocating for things that would help the poor kids in Anacostia?
Well, I mean, in fact, I mean, more than that, this notion that districts routinely cave to middle class seems, you know, more or less at odds with history. For 35 years, we've seen the urban core emptying out of middle class parents with kids precisely because they felt the schools weren't kowtowing enough to their needs and interests.
Right.
So it's kind of I'm not exactly sure. I haven't read the full journal article. I don't know if they had empirical evidence that we didn't flag here, but. Oh, it seems a peculiar argument.
Empirical evidence.
What's that?
Come on. Okay.
All right. Final topic.
By the way, Rick, this has been very serious conversations.
We're serious people today.
All right.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Let's lighten the mood.
Let's lighten the mood.
Do one of your mouth noise things. Dude, you are gifted.
Thank you. Okay. Jen?
All right. Philadelphia's Mayor John Street is threatening to arrest parents of constantly truant youngsters. Should parents go to jail for their truant kids? Is such a strategy at all feasible? What can be done to force kids to attend school?
This one I love. Again, we talked about paternalism earlier. I mean, Mayor Street got 4,000 parents in the arena in Philadelphia and lectured them, you know, took them to the woodshed about not having their kids in schools and said that if it continues, he's going to throw them in jail.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is, you know, trying to impact parental behavior. You know, what do you think? This is good stuff?
This is good stuff. I mean, one of the things that gets lost in the debates is, by both sides, is that schooling is both a private and a public good. It matters a lot to you and me whether these other parents make sure their kids go to school. If these parents aren't taking responsibility for their kids, it's actually what we have every right as a community to have our leaders come down on these folks and push them to take care of the responsibility.
I have to say, Rick, I thought you were going to take a different position. I figured you'd be Mr. Libertarian on this one.
No, yeah, but even libertarians acknowledge that people who are not in a position to take care of themselves, particularly children and you know, addicts of various stripes, actually need the state to step in and make sure their interests are attended to. In fact, Milton Friedman always made the exception that children needed to have the state safeguard their interest.
Okay. But, you know, couldn't you also argue that part of the problem is that the schools that that Mayor Street is providing for these students aren't very good? I mean, if that there were better choices in Philadelphia, more compelling programs, then maybe you wouldn't have all these problems?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's certainly a reasonable response. Although I got to say, without any data on these folks at hand, that I suspect very few of them are not sending their kids to school as some form of civil protest at the quality of the school.
You know, my favorite part of the article in the Philadelphia Inquirer was at the end. It said there were a couple thousand parents who didn't show up to the arena, and the district officials weren't exactly clear what they were supposed to do about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, if most of these folks are actually doing this because they're dissatisfied with the options that's being provided, that's one thing.
Yep.
If, in fact, they are simply being inattentive or ineffective parents, mm-hmm. That's a whole different ballgame.
All right. Well, that is it for Part of the Gadfly. Thank you, Jen, for these excellent reading of the topics.
Yeah, nicely read.
You know,
so, Jen, what's your preferred pronunciation on the last name? Is Mike really right?
Leischer. Okay.
Mike's really right?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I'm usually right.
Man.
You know, Rick, I got to say one more thing. That there was a blogger wrote about us this week, and he said that we were giggling like a bunch of frat boys. Now, does that sound like a frat boy to anybody else? I don't think so. It sounds like a schoolgirl.
That's right.
That would have been the right.
In fact, I was in a fraternity briefly, but I got kicked out.
Wow, we're going to have to save that for another day.
It was ambiguous. I think you still get conflicting accounts.
All right. Well,
but you were a president of fraternity, weren't you?
I was not. No.
But
no.
you were an official of some stripe.
I was. I can't talk about it. That was all secret. All right. Maybe another day. But now we have a very special interview. Let's take a listen. Today we're talking about an incident that occurred in Albuquerque where a principal, concerned that a student's haircut displayed gang signs, drove him off campus to the barber to remove the illicit insignias. During the trip, the principal claims that he showed the student the neighborhood where he grew up, but the student claims that the principal grabbed his neck. The student's father is now suing. So, who is right in this case? Here to tell us, a distinguished jurist and a respected public servant, Judge Judy. Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Hello.
Hello back. So, Judge Judy, have you heard about this case?
Listen to me. I want you to speak slowly, speak clearly, so that I can understand you.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just tell you what happened. A principal took a student off campus to remove gang signs that he had shaved into the student's head, that had been shaved into the student's head.
That's baloney. It doesn't make sense.
It was in the newspaper. What doesn't make sense about it?
2,000 and 1,500 does not add up to 3,100. Even I know that. I'm a really smart lady.
I'm sure you are, Judge Judy.
Much smarter than you are. On your best day, you're not as smart as I am on my worst day. Oh. I eat morons like you up for breakfast.
Okay. Let's go back to Albuquerque. Is the principal wrong to take the student off campus? I mean, doesn't he have a responsibility to combat gang violence however he can?
Of course. Do you listen at all?
Yeah, sure. I listen.
What did I just say?
Well, you said that the principal should do whatever it takes to combat gang violence in a school.
No. Let me explain something to you, sir. Not only are you not a very nice person, you're also a slob.
What? A slob? Have you seen Liam?
Mike, don't bring me into this.
I'm listening to one person at a time. So you get zippo, nada. You can't dance fast enough for me. Do you understand?
Excuse me, Judge. I'm actually a very good dancer. But you know who else is a good dancer is Andy Rotherham. Do you know him? He's a pretty good writer, too. And I read a lot of his stuff, including his blog, Eduwonk.
Do you have a television set?
Sure I do.
What kind of television set do you have?
I don't know. Hitachi, maybe?
That is an untenable situation for somebody to have to live with. I don't know where your head is. Just answer this question. What kind of work do you do?
Oh, well, you know, I'm the vice president of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation and the co-host of the Education Gadfly Show.
Good for you.
Are you mocking me? I mean, you know, the work we do is really important. I mean, what do you think I should do?
Get a life, you know, get a real job.
All right. Well, then that is all the time we have for today, Judge Judy. But I do thank you for coming on the show.
Just remember where you are and what it is that you hope to accomplish today. Goodbye.
Well, and goodbye to you. Again, Judge Judy, thank you for coming on the show.
So what do you think, Rick? That Judge Judy's pretty tough, huh?
Judge Judy, man. She's a dish.
She called me a slob.
She called you a slut?
A slob.
Oh, slob. I was wondering. I thought when I was listening to that thing, I wasn't entirely clear I'd caught that right.
See, that's a frat boy comment.
Is it?
Yeah.
I was thinking Judge Judy was getting a little randy for the year.
All right. Well, it is time for everybody's favorite education news of the weird.
Now, isn't Judge Judy, is she married to the big, tall, black fella judge? Sam Brown or something?
I don't watch as much TV as you do, Rick.
Who's the other judge? Somebody help me out here.
Joe
Brown? Are they married?
I don't know.
Oh.
Really?
I don't know.
She's married to another TV judge?
It could be.
That doesn't sound
remember
right.
Judge Wapner?
He was the best.
He was killer.
He was the standard.
I dug him.
The people's judge.
There you go.
All right. It's time for Education News of the Weird with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what is weird this week?
Mike, the editorial board at the St. Petersburg Times has taken a stand. Quote, a teacher with a checkered history who stuffs a high school ballot box to get her niece elected homecoming queen ought to be fired.
Damn it!
Unquote. The newspaper's ire stems from the actions of Sherrion Thurman, who deposited more than 500 falsified ballots marked for her niece during Gibbs High School's homecoming court elections. According to the Times, Thurman has previously been cited for insubordination, lack of professional ethics, repeatedly reporting late to work, and being disorganized in the classroom. Not good. Rick, tell us some stories about your high school's homecoming court.
Man, they wouldn't. They wouldn't even talk to me. Actually, I can't even remember their names. All I remember is trying to, like, throw pebbles at their window and then having them throw bricks back out at me. That was tough. Tough times.
Story of